Serial Entrepreneur.
Hello and welcome back to the Serial Entrepreneur podcast series brought to you by Startups Magazine. You are listening to me, Anna Flockett, your editor and host. And today I'm very excited to be chatting with Brendan Kiley, CEO and co-founder of ThinScale Technology. These guys are a startup that are specialists in remote working software and optimizing virtual work environments, very crucial right now in the current climate. Through ThinScale Technology, employees can access their usual work desktop, while companies can manage and access enhanced security within minutes. ThinScale is also the creators of Thin Kiosk, the original Windows-based software-defined Thin client, so we have a lot to talk about today. Brendan, first of all, welcome, and how are you today?
Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I'm good. A bit tired. I think that's everybody is a bit jaded from the respective lockdowns under which we are all living. But yeah, no, very good. Very good.
Good. Now, to start with, I thought we could just go back to the beginning for our listeners and you could just explain in some more detail what exactly ThinScale Technology does and how it was founded.
Yeah, so we've been kind of in the remote and home working space for quite a long time. And I suppose our key platform product is we've developed software that enables employees to work securely from home using their own machine. So Secure Remote Worker is a software only solution. There's no shipping of hardware, any of that. And I suppose we're pretty proud to say that we're the only company in the world that can offer this type of software. But I suppose just to, you asked about going back, how did this come about? Like every startup, we have numerous startup, as I call them, the high stool and long bar stories, some of which I hope to share with you today. But with my brother-in-law, Andrew, he was working in the, and still does, in the virtualization kind of area for a long time. And he was very frustrated going out to customers implementing virtualization projects. And yet there was all these PCs that were being discarded to be replaced with hardware thin clients. And the only solution out there was Linux. There was no Windows-based solution. So Andrew, being Andrew, decided, I'm going to build a Windows version of that. And that was how it started. From there, we kind of asked ourselves the question, well, okay, we're converting old PCs to be thin clients, but what about a software-defined thin client where you could put our software on any endpoint and turn it into a thin client and have it managed from a central point and unified security and unified management and all of that. And we achieved that fairly quickly and acquired quite a few customers. And then I suppose the next question was, well, can we make this work on personal PCs? And that was, it was like a journey that you just get to the top of the mountain and then you see another Mount Everest on top of it. And but we got there in the end, and it's been, technically it was a very difficult journey. The key component there, I suppose, is the compliance pieces, PCI, which is related to credit card, HIPAA, which is related to health and that kind of thing. And obviously it's become front and center in the COVID-19 pandemic.
Definitely. I will be chatting to you specifically about that later. When did you guys officially found ThinScale Technology, and how many are on your team now? How have you grown in the time?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think we officially signed a piece of paper in November, December 2012, but we shipped our first enterprise license around June 2013. I suppose there are multiple journeys ongoing at the same time with any startup, and the people is always kind of the key journey. And in the beginning, there was my brother-in-law was kind of part-time, and then it was myself and the two dogs in the front room for quite a while. And then we moved into a startup center, which was, I got a hot desk there, which was very important looking back on it, because it's important that I think that you find your tribe. Startup is not something to do in isolation, and it can be very difficult in isolation. So went into a startup building, and that was around March 14, 2014. And from there, I mean, today we have, I think it's around 22, 23. We've hired a couple of people since the lockdown, and we're going to be announcing some jobs very soon in the tech and sales space. So we're fast going to become in the region of about 40 people. I would say certainly by the end of this year, we'll be around 40 people.
Amazing. And could you tell me a little bit more about your journey and your background?
Yeah, so it's varied, to be honest with you. But I think if you look for a thread that goes through it all, it's probably sales, persuasion, selling new ideas, that kind of thing. I've been involved in politics over the years, so I had a couple of different political jobs on the pro-European side of things, I must say. I was the man who said yes in the Lisbon campaigns in Ireland. I ran national campaigns, local and European campaigns as well. But aside from that, I worked for American Express and a couple of other multinationals along the way, and in sales roles, in corporate affairs roles, those kind of things. So yeah, I think, you know, if you look back and say, well, what was a key experience that anybody having a startup should have? And I think it's owning a P&L, whether that's within a big organization or a smaller organization, because it's not something you can teach in a classroom. You can teach the mechanics of it, but it's the emotional piece of having the responsibility that the books balance, that there's money to pay people at the end of the month. All of those things are things that you learn. If you can pick those up before you have your own startup, it's certainly a big advantage.
Definitely. And taking it back to the solution and thin scale technology, who are your main customers, would you say? And do you have like different products and solutions to suit different customers?
Yeah, well, I suppose we're primarily at the endpoint piece. So the endpoint being the computer that you work on, and we're, you know, at the space of securing that to allow you access your corporate environment. And both our products, Thin Kiosk and Secure Remote Worker, do that in different ways. So just to give you a couple of examples, we would, for example, there's a European government, about 20% of their public servants access their resources through our software, and it locks down, Thin Kiosk locks down those machines and ensures that they can only access what the systems administrator needs them to access. And they can't save anything to the C drive, they can't put in USBs, all of that kind of thing. Secure Remote Worker was a product that, whilst it's used in multiple industries, probably where it found its largest niche was the business processing outsourcing, BPOs. And largely because the BPOs were way ahead of the curve in terms of remote working. So we would have a significant number of the top of the 9 or 10 BPOs in the world. And a number of them already had very developed work at home programs. So we would have started off working with a BPO that had over 2,000 people working at home in effectively a decentralized call center type scenario, business processing scenario. And they were shipping hardware to those people because of the compliance that had to be achieved, the PCI and HIPAA I mentioned earlier. And it's very difficult to achieve that without providing a piece of hardware. So you can imagine the cost, the distribution costs in sending those, the insurance, not getting them back when people leave. There's a massive amount of cost. And as we always say, once you go over 100, posting 100 machines, you're now in the hardware distribution business as well as the BPO business. So that was the challenge for us. And we worked very closely with one of the top BPOs on that challenge. And we developed our software so that it can be deployed centrally to a person's personal Windows machine. And when they log on, they're locked out, temporarily locked out of their personal machine. And they're in the secure environment, either the end customer that the BPO is working for or the BPO themselves. And then when they log off again, they have their own PC back, and the twain environments shall not meet, if that makes sense. And that's important also from the employee's perspective, because they don't necessarily want their employer nosing around on their personal machine. Let's be realistic here. So they're very much in control of that. The user is very much in control of that level of access. But the company is able to provide assurances to their customers that this is secure. And we would have tens of thousands of users now right across the world. We have BPOs scaling 30, 40,000 users, because obviously when COVID hit, there was massive problems that started to appear straight away. Number one, people were sent home with machines that were within a secure environment. And when they came outside of that secure environment, those machines actually ended up infecting their corporate environments. There's a lot of evidence of that now. Secondly, there's nobody in the buildings to receive the broken machine when they want to send it back. And then there was other BPOs who had remote working programs built around USB sticks. But of course, in some of those scenarios, those USB sticks had to be bought in shops. The shops are closed. So it's been a very interesting couple of weeks.
Definitely. And around the work that you've been doing in terms of the COVID-19 crisis, obviously Think Kiosk and Secure Remote Worker being the key one. Was this software and this solution already, you'd already developed it? You hadn't developed it just for the COVID?
Yeah.
No, but had you released some new versions or some new bits to kind of assist with the COVID crisis?
Yeah, so it's funny. It was fully developed and deployed with some very, very large customers long before COVID came out. I think the development that we've done since it's come out has to been to assist in scaling and speeding up the scaling ability. And we've done a lot of work in terms of working with deployment teams and getting processes down more slicker, if that makes sense, because, you know, there's a big difference between 2,000 and 40,000 machines that all have to go live within a given period of time. And we're dealing also with some customers, not to categorize them too much, but those that had remote working scenarios set up, whether they were BPOs or not, it was a scaling conversation. And then it was a question of how they're doing it. Are you doing it with hardware or not? And how can we work with that? We've had others who've gone from a complete standstill who had not embraced home working. And I think internally, the cultural shift for those companies has been very difficult. And, you know, if you look at why home working wasn't ubiquitous before, I mean, even taking it further back, the way we work was defined by the Industrial Revolution. And technology has come and been coming for quite a long time to enable us to change. And our views of this have been changing at different paces. And there's been blockers to that where it's fears around productivity, it's fears around security. And really, the COVID-19 pandemic has forced companies and individuals within those companies to face those fears because they have to. They have no choice. And what they're finding is actually this is doable. So from a productivity perspective, all the academic research shows that people will be more productive. And that's been borne out. We're seeing that right across the board. But also we're kind of the last piece of that homeworking jigsaw that secures a personal machine, which makes it financially far more viable to have a work at home program because of all the issues that I outlined earlier. And I think as well, I mean, not to jump too far ahead, but business continuity has changed. Business continuity was defined by 9/11 over the last 10 or 15 years. That's the reality. Business continuity will be defined future by this pandemic. And the answers from 9/11 were you had a building in a different place and you brought everybody there, or you distributed out laptops. That was the answer. And of course, COVID, those answers didn't apply. So for me, the demands of customers, of BPOs, and indeed of any business will be that you will have a business continuity plan in place. And then the next logical step is, well, without a home working program, it won't be a serious business continuity plan. Our experience of home working, it's actually quite a complex thing to do, and you can't just map it out on paper and implement it overnight. It's got to be upstanding and running and updated on an ongoing basis in the context of COVID-20. God, let's hope not, but you know, who knows at this stage?
No one. And I guess that's one of the elements as well, the problems is you don't know. Everyone's doing this remote working and they're getting used to it and they're becoming better at it. And like you say, people are scaling and they just don't know till when or how long it's for.
Yeah, and I'd say a couple of things to that, right? Firstly, and this is right across all the industries that we deal with, be it from local national governments to aircraft manufacturing, etc., etc. We've started seeing a shift in the last 3 weeks whereby we're moving out of the business continuity kind of crisis phase into a more strategic phase where companies are asking themselves, how is this going to impact us in the medium term? There are various numbers rolling around. Anywhere from 25 to 40% of people are probably going to remain at home. And we see some very large companies making strategic decisions that that is the way it's going to be, irrespective of the outcome of COVID and all of that. I think as well, that is a very significant thing. But I think as well, you know, it's riding on the wave of a wave that was rising anyway around work at home. And just to go back to, you know, whether things are going to change or not, in the short to medium term, there's two assumptions that I keep hearing being made within the media at the moment that I think need to be challenged. The assumption is, number one, about immunity. And I'm not a scientist, but I haven't seen any scientist in any media saying 100% we will be immune after you've had it. The other assumption is this inevitability of a vaccine. There's never been a corona vaccine created before. And I just don't see how, I mean, I hope it's going to come as quickly as possible. So I think in the immediate future, we'll all be working from home. And I think there'll be some sort of a hybrid model. There'll still be a role for the office where we will bring people together, but we're not sure what that's going to be yet. I think in the past, in the recent past, you know, we've seen work at home being mandated by companies, you know, 2 days at home, 3 days in the office. And that's been proven not to be as successful because really the individual, they want to wrap their work around their life and not the other way around. And I think companies are finding that if they allow them to do that, they'll get more from their employees in every sense, productivity, loyalty, all of those things. So I think it's not just about where you work, but it's about having a flexible approach to how you work. We have some of our team, they've always worked odd non-9-to-5 hours because it either suits their family life or they just work better that way. You know, some people just work better that way. So as a company, we've always been sensitive to this. And I think that will become more ubiquitous. And being honest with you, I think it makes sense. You know, there's a lot of interaction that happens that are metric based, but we don't necessarily write it down when we're in the office, that human contact. I think a lot of managers are realizing as well that in remote working scenarios, there's a whole seam of information that you don't necessarily pick up. So there needs to be greater clarity in terms of, I think things are going to become more project orientated and outcome or and driven. And if that's the case, then people are freer to work when it suits them and when it suits them to be at their best.
It's really interesting. And one of my other questions was, which I guess you've kind of touched on, so forgive me if I'm just making you repeat yourself, but how important do you think it is for businesses to be able to adapt to being virtual? I mean, obviously we've had to with this pandemic, but even in the future, how important is it for them to be able to be virtual and more flexible and have access to software like yours, for example?
Yeah, and when you say access to software like ours, we are one piece of the puzzle. There's the delivery of the apps. There's a whole other thing that goes with that. I think the future is here already, if I'm truly honest. And this COVID is acting as an accelerator to things that were already happening. But I think it's critical for future businesses. And you're seeing differences with companies. Companies that were, you know, as they say, digitally born. We were digitally born. You know, we don't have our own servers, you know, with all our stuff on it, bar one techie who insists on having his own box that he wants to wrap his arms around. But hey, but all of our apps, everything, they're all in the cloud. You know, we don't have any legacy apps. And I think those that have embraced that or are digitally born are in a much better position to handle what's going on now. And when I say, I'm not being flippant when I say the future is here, we are not going to go back to the way we were. Because the economics of things will change as well. It's not just about COVID. People's habits are going to change. You're always going to have staff who are going to say, well, I want to work from home. And they'll say, well, we don't do that. Well, you did during the pandemic and it worked. So you're into this whole new relationship. We're hiring people in the pandemic. It's the first time I've ever hired people that I haven't met in person. We've had two new starts and we're going to be hiring more over the coming weeks and months. I think people keep talking about volatility and that's the new norm. And there's a lot of truth to that. But we will find our new norm, you know, and there will be a path out of this and things will come back to a way that will suit us as a culture and as a society. But I think we're some way off yet from fully defining what that is. I mean, even I think the regulatory framework around HR will have to be looked at and all of these different things will have to be accounted for. I think it will be critical for businesses to have plans in place for pandemics such as this, number one, but number two, to accept now that we are not going back to the way it was anytime soon. And this will be a 2-year haul. And I'm unpopular when I say that. People, you know, are very frustrated. They're in a lockdown. But I truly believe that. And I've been saying it for quite a while now, much to the annoyance of some of my family.
It's just scary, isn't it? Like, people don't want to kind of come to grips with the truth because, you know, a lot of people think, oh yeah, after these 3 weeks we'll be out. No, they don't believe that. They're just kind of trying to tell themselves that.
Yeah, and there's a societal psychological shift going on. And going back to my kind of politics days and all of that, this is a very challenging time for any government that they have to communicate in a sea of uncertainty in which they don't have all the facts and they're trying to do the best for their people. And that's why we're seeing different approaches from different countries, because there is no template for this. You know, this is not normal economics. It's not normal healthcare systems as we know it. I mean, even on the healthcare system piece, you know, Ireland, they doubled the size of our healthcare system in 3.5 weeks. I mean, who would have thought we couldn't even get an A&E sorted, you know, 6 months ago, and now we're doubling the size of the system. And now the question is, and similarly in the UK for the NHS, what pieces do we leave there? What pieces do have to continue to stand up? I think there's huge questions for, and I have friends who are entrepreneurs in the hotel and restaurant scenarios, and they're probably going to be the last to be allowed to reopen. And then if there's social distancing, the numbers just won't add up. So there's a lot of questions around how those businesses are going to survive. And remember, they provide employment for thousands and thousands and thousands of people. It's going to be very, very difficult times ahead because we are going to have to adjust to a new economic norm.
Definitely. And like you say, there's different challenges for different businesses. And some people, the challenge is just kind of surviving. What would you say the biggest challenge? I mean, obviously, I'm guessing you've seen an increase in customers and people wanting to scale, like you said. But yeah. Has there been any major challenges for you guys within the whole like corona pandemic?
Yeah, well, so many other businesses are suffering. We're doing very well. So I feel it's first world problems in our sense, you know, but I suppose, look, you've asked the question about challenges, and really it's been about servicing the customers that are in need. For example, we prioritize BPOs who are working with frontline operators, contact tracing for phone banks, all of those kind of things. We've had some discussions with the government and we're open to assisting in any way that we can in terms of helping standing up those contact centers in a decentralized way, if that makes sense. So I think our challenge has been scaling up our internal operations. Our team have worked incredibly hard. I'm not the only one who hasn't had a day off since February. It's every day, it's relentless. But at the same time, we have to be there to help those customers, because some of our customers, they haven't had time off within the same frame, because people forget it. A lot of these call centers support vital infrastructure for the state in the fight for COVID-19. So I think managing the multiple challenges that customers are having and really trying to assist them in their hour of need, that's probably been the biggest challenge. And, you know, we'll continue to do it and we'll continue to expand while we do that. And also trying to cut through the noise with customers. We had our friend across the water when he announced everybody would be back by Easter. You know, there was one or two companies who took that to heart and believed that. And, you know, you're sitting on a call and you're trying to be diplomatic and go, you know, don't want to point out the obvious here, but that ain't going to happen, you know. And you're, it's a very fine line there when you get into that kind of stuff, like, you know.
Definitely. And if you could kind of sum up the last, how long has it been now, 6 to 8 weeks, your corona kind of journey, describe the journey, how it's been for Thin Sky Technology.
Yeah, it's breakneck speed, you know. You look back and it feels like it was 6 months ago, but it was only 6 weeks ago where this really kicked off in the UK and Ireland. I think as well, on a personal level, we were mentioning earlier around education, and this is not just a work at home experiment. This is a homeschooling experiment. And that's very difficult for some people. And I think kind of going off on a bit of a tangent here, but the facts are that the experiment of transferring the classroom into the kitchen has not been 100% successful. And we need to, as business, try and, you know, engage with education around the different solutions that business has used over the development of work at home and contribute to that homeschooling story. And I see it with my own kids, you know, and it depends on the age, both of the kids and of the teacher, in terms of their technology abilities. So I think as employers and as entrepreneurs, we have to recognize that our staff are all dealing with various different situations, whether it's homeschooling, whether, you know, you're stuck in a one bedroom apartment for 6 weeks in the middle of the city and you haven't seen a blade of grass in 6 weeks. You know, these are real things. And then you have households where both sides are working and they're trying to homeschool at the same time. So, I mean, some of our guys are working more on the US stuff so that their partner can work in the morning and then they work late into the night. And I just think it's very important that we're mindful of the pressures and stresses that people are under. And it's not just about our business. It's about their well-being as well, and that's really important.
Yeah, definitely. And what do you guys kind of have planned for the future? Did you have a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan, and then Corona came along?
Well, every business plans, and we certainly didn't plan for this, and I think it's certainly accelerated our growth in an area that we thought would take a lot longer, and that's largely due to the cultural change that's happening because of work at home. So we're certainly looking at our plans. We're looking at ways to assist companies in the whole work at home space and providing more features and functionality that allows them manage their people better, and also allows employees work from home better as well. So yeah, lots of planning going on and lots of very good conversations with customers, because people are very open to change now. They're very open to, and also we found decision-making structures within companies in some cases collapsed, and in other cases, the speed at which it started moving was just unprecedented. So, and there's a need being driven, and I really hope we learn from that. You can get really cool things done in a very short period of time if you can knock away a lot of the bureaucracy that normally exists. So yeah, no plans for world domination yet, but we're soon to be, actually, we've just signed an agreement with a global BPO, so we're soon to be in 80 countries, up from 22. So we'll have users right the way around the world in all time zones. So that's pretty exciting. We're very excited about that, and we'll have an announcement coming on that very soon.
It's really refreshing to see some positivity coming from the whole, like, negative pandemic. It's nice to see that.
Yeah.
I know it must feel awful when some businesses are struggling, but it's really good to see that some are really prospering and helping people in this crisis.
Yeah, give me an example. Like I have a call every morning with a group of CEOs. There's probably about 11 or 12. You usually get about 9 on every morning, 7:45. And we're all from different backgrounds, from hotels to, you name it, the list goes on. Restaurants, recruitment. And I found that really good, because it's an anchor point where it's giving you a view into the world of the different challenges that are facing entrepreneurs, and you're there to be able to support them in whatever small way possible, and them you as well. It's very important that we accept. We actually have a call this afternoon, which is our only time, we're not doing it in the morning, and it really is about how we help some of that group think in new ways to rethink their business. Don't think about the old model. If you were to start again and to deliver your service, how would you do it? Because that's what it's going to take. And I think there's a huge amount of positivity that can come out of this. It's really challenging the way we think as people, how we operate as households, how our education system works or doesn't work, the relationships that we have, you know, both in a work context and a personal context. I think all of those things are really good. I think it's just very overwhelming at the moment because it's all happening at the same time, with a very uncertain short-term, medium-term in front of us. And it's taking people time to move, but, you know, to shift their mindset around that. But I do believe so much positivity can come from this. I really do.
And that's really amazing to hear. And I guess you kind of touched on this. Maybe you've given some in your calls, but do you have any advice for other startups and small businesses out there right now?
I know it sounds quite stereotypical, but never waste a good crisis. When people are open to change, you know, so much can happen. I mean, we started, a lot of people would have asked, you know, we're 98-99% export since the day we started. And Ireland, we export, I don't know, 3/4 of what we produce or over that. We're a small, the most open economy in the world. But people go, why is that? Why do you have so few customers in Ireland? And it's because we started in the teeth of the last recession. There was no business in Ireland. I mean, we never even thought about selling anything in Ireland. It just wasn't even on the cards. And we kind of continued in that vein. You know, it wasn't a strategy or anything. It was just an absolute need. And had you had told me 10 years ago that, like, in our first 4 years or 3.5 years in business, we only physically sat in front of 4 customers. You know, we didn't travel because we didn't have the money to. This, our model was selling exactly like I'm talking to you today. So I suppose in a way we were ahead of the curve on that. We know how to do that. We've just developed those skills over time. And I think businesses, that this is one example, that businesses will see that this is possible. And we've been doing this for a long time now, six, seven years. And it's really worked. And it can work. You don't have to travel. Now we go and see, probably go on 3 or 4 trips a year, some bigger customers. We do a whip around the US and all of that kind of thing. But in the beginning, we just didn't. And it's possible to do. And yeah, so I would say never waste a good crisis. There will be so many opportunities born out of this. You just have to try and step back and open your eyes to see them and be open to those, because I think people are open to change.
Definitely. That's good advice. It's been really inspiring and refreshingly positive to speak with you today. So thank you so much, Brendan, for chatting with me.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Serial Entrepreneur.